you tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Oh man, that always puts me in such a good mood hearing that music from Caleb Stein, one of Baltimore's great musicians. I'm here today, though, with another Baltimorean. Just found this out, Sam Fitz from Ancho Cidery here in D.C. And I'm really excited to talk to Sam about all things cider and apples. Sam, thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here today.
So I was telling you, I drive by Ancho every time I'm on my way here to the Line Hotel, and been there, love it, and I'm really excited to get your perspective on, you know, this this kind of cool moment we're in with cider, right? Cider's kind of having a moment. Is that fair?
I certainly hope so.
So, but tell me a little bit about where you're coming from, because I love the fact that we have Baltimore kind of in our as our starting point, I guess.
Yeah, I grew up in Baltimore and loved the city, but left when I was 18, and kind of got lost on my way a little bit. So after about 10 years in the beer industry, I discovered the beautiful thing that is cider, and it's been about 4 years on that journey so far.
And doing amazing things. And I want to talk a lot about what you're doing at Ancho, the cider you're making, the restaurant itself. But let's start maybe a little further back, and I think there's such an incredible history that the apple and cider have in this country, and maybe we've lost a little bit of sight of that. And I'd love to hear about that, and then maybe we could talk about this kind of recent, kind of exciting things that are happening with apples and cider, especially in this region.
Yeah, I think when most people think of alcohol before Prohibition, they're really thinking about beer, even though it was German immigrants that came over in the late 1800s that made beer popular. But before that, we were a country of cider drinkers. Our history is really broken from Prohibition because cider comes from apple trees that take 3 to 10 years to mature, as opposed to beer, where you can grow grains in just a couple months. So this country was the greatest cider country and the best place to enjoy apples, the best place to drink apples, really, until we lost our way and cut our trees down. So part of Ancho's mission and my mission is to recreate what used to be the greatest apple country in the world, really.
So the trees getting cut down was a consequence of Prohibition.
Yeah, the alcohol of every kind was prohibited, obviously.
Right.
And apple trees take resources that take many years, just like a typical farm would. And so when the trees were cut down 15, 20 years when Prohibition was repealed, people couldn't just go out and start making good cider again. And they also weren't really interested in investing in really anything to make quality alcohol. And that's when we saw all the breweries conglomerate. But they were able to do that and produce their product right away, whereas cider just became a thing of the past.
What a loss, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now fast forward, and here we are, it's 2018, but, I would say, like, getting Woodbury going in 2007, even then, around 10 years, a little more than 10 years ago, cider, there wasn't the local ciders, you know, production, there weren't the exciting ciders that are now a mainstay of our, you know, of our beverage program there, and obviously what you're doing. I mean, it's that recent, I think, that this kind of new moment for cider, would you say?
Well, I mean, think back to the early 90s with craft beer. My mom, also from Baltimore, used to run an event called the Brew Review when I was a kid. And so I remember being, I didn't drink at the time, obviously, but I remember being a 10-year-old volunteer going to all these craft beer events with breweries like Blue Moon and Weeping Radish and the things that predated Dogfish and Allagash. And at that time, the beer industry was going through what the cider industry is going through now, which is a couple people saying, hey, I can make good beer also. It doesn't have to be done by giants. But that happened in the early 90s with beer, and it just didn't happen with cider at all. So now in the cider world, we have a couple companies like Angry Orchard and Woodchuck that have shown that there is a big market for cider and that there's a lot of money to be made. And now we have people like us who are coming around like the people in the early 90s did with beer and saying, well, this isn't rocket science. We're making wine, and it's actually easier than beer because we don't have to heat anything. I don't have a boiler. We put good juice in barrels, and we take really good care of it, but that's about it. And so we're starting to show people that cider is something that everyone can make, that every region that grows apples should have local producers. And also, that's another thing worth noting, is that unlike beer, if you want to be a real local producer, you should probably be in an area that grows apples well, which is another fun thing for Ancho being in the Mid-Atlantic.
It's unbelievable. I think one of the things that I've been concerned about is, one of the things I love about apples is they weren't always grown in orchards, right? Apples were kind of a part of a farmstead or a community. Large orchards, as what I understand about them, is they were kind of a more recent development, right?
So I'm definitely not a historian. I'm sure there's another show that will do more justice to your question. But the story that I know from Johnny Appleseed is that he was really an entrepreneur who was going out ahead of the frontiersmen. He was going to future states like Ohio before anybody was there. And I believe at the time the government was giving away free land to people that could prove that they would stay on it. And the way that they could prove it was by planting enough apple trees. So what Johnny Appleseed was doing was he was providing frontiersmen with the resources they needed in order to claim their land. And so these weren't like giant orchards like we might think of today. These are stands of 10 to 100 trees on people's property. And then, not necessarily related to your question, but one of the things that I find most interesting is that it was that specific activity that made America the greatest apple growing region that ever existed, because apple trees don't grow true to seed, which means if you plant an apple tree, you don't really know what will come up. And really, when you plant apple seed, the chances that you're going to create a tree that's never been on the planet before are actually quite high. Unfortunately, most of them are pretty terrible.
Right.
So what would happen in the frontier is you would plant 100 trees, and then 10 years later, you come back and you'd say, tree 37 is good for cider, tree 42 is good for eating, and tree 72 is good for baking, and the rest all need to be cut down now. And then when you cut them down, you can graft the varietals that you like on. So then you have these frontier families who have just three types of apples, one for eating, one for baking, and one for drinking. And this was the type of knowledge that the average American had in the mid-1800s, whereas nowadays no one has any idea that apples have these different characteristics.
Right. And we've lost a lot of them, you know, over time, right?
And that was in when I mentioned trees being cut down in Prohibition, it wasn't just quantity that we lost, but we lost a lot of these varietals.
Right.
Ancho is dedicated to a varietal called Harrison, which was grown in the Mid-Atlantic in the colonial era. And it was the cider apple that the state shipped to England because England thought it was the best cider apple that existed, but they couldn't grow it. Harrison's an example of a tree that we cut down in Prohibition. It was lost for 70 years until they found a single tree growing in some guy's yard in New Jersey. And 10 years later, we're now growing it on the patio at Ancho.
No way.
Yep.
And are other people growing Harrison?
Yeah. So Harrison is quite pricey right now because there's not a lot of it. Ancho made 275 gallons of Harrison cider this year that we fought tooth and nail to get, and that was all that we could get. But people are planting a lot of it, and the greatest thing about Harrison is that because it originated here, it's disease resistant in the Mid-Atlantic, so we grow it in downtown DC without any sprays or intervention of any kind.
It's so hard to grow tree fruit around here, isn't it? Is it one of your challenges to find?
Finding apples is really difficult. I think we forget that D.C. is right in the heart of apple-growing region. So I actually grow 20 trees on my residential house in D.C., and we have 10 huge ones on the patio of Ancho. I would actually encourage Washingtonians to put apple trees in their yard. But with that said, yes, sourcing is very difficult because there just really isn't a lot of quantity of good quality cider trees.
So let's talk about Ancho right now, and we'll get right back to the ciders in a second. But you opened in...
We opened 2 years ago, so that would be 2016. We just had our two-year anniversary.
And how's it going?
You know, it's been good. Running a restaurant, as you might know, is quite a challenge. Our cidery side has 3 employees. Our restaurant side has 45 employees. I'm really lucky that my sister runs our HR and employee side, because that is not my forte.
I think what people don't get about restaurants is they're the least efficient thing you'll ever build. I mean, they are just, it takes so many people to run a restaurant. We're
putting so much time into trying to create systems that make things run more smoothly, and we're just spending more and more time creating systems. I'm not really sure we're getting anywhere.
We can talk about that. The restaurant is inspired, Ancho itself is inspired by
the Basque Country.
In Spain.
Yeah, so just very quick story. I was a beer buyer in D.C. I worked at a lot of beer places, and I still love beer to this day, but I got very jaded with it. I only wanted to drink Pilsner, and I wasn't a very good buyer, deciding that I only wanted to drink one style of beer. And I took a really influential trip to Basque Country with one of my other business partners, Cooper. And we were just out there to have some fun. And for people that have been, you know that it's one of the greatest food experiences of your life. I don't know if it's too much information, but I just quit cigarettes at the time. So my palate had finally awoken up after a 10-year slumber. And we just had this experience in Basque Country that was about food, culture, and cider. And we came back and we said, man, we didn't know anything about cider before. We definitely don't know anything about cider now. What do we do? And that's when we decided to open Ancho. I traveled through Western England, Normandy, Brittany, all of Northern Spain. I went to the Pacific Northwest. I went to Canada. And that's largely the known cider world. And that was the inspiration for opening Ancho.
And Ancho itself, the name is?
So it's the Ancho is a common name in Northern Spain, but it's also a nickname for Basa Haun. Basa Haun is the Basque wild man who essentially taught humans agriculture, ironworking, and sheep herding, which are the skills that humans needed to leave the woods and become civilized. So we love this connection between humanity and the natural world. It fits well with both our culinary and our cider aspirations. And our cider isn't necessarily all Basque. It's actually not Basque, but the restaurant is definitely heavily influenced by that culture.
Well, yeah, I love the connection to back to ag. I mean, when you talk about that, and we're talking about apples that are being grown here and elsewhere, and you get a bunch of your apples from the Mid-Atlantic, but also you're sourcing from out west, right?
Yeah, we have an awesome orchard partner in Washington State. Essentially, these guys were really forward-thinking, and they started planting cider, what I call cider fruit, about 30 years ago. So they're in Wenatchee, where everybody's growing apples, but they're the only people there that have 30-year-old trees that we're looking for. And while I would love to buy everything local, some of these apples I just can't find locally.
Was the intent always to make cider when you opened Ancho?
No, actually. We were able to self-import cider in D.C. that isn't sold by distributors. So when we opened Ancho, we decided to carry all these cider brands that aren't usually available here. And we realized that if we became a producer legally, it would allow us to sell to go as well, so that guests could come to our restaurant, enjoy a cider that they haven't tried anywhere else, and take it home. But then Whole Foods started ordering all these cases that we didn't make. And so we actually took a lease out on our second location before the restaurant opened. And that is more of a proper cidery. And that's kind of how we got into it, is just there was demand, so we started doing it. And that's pretty much the way that we're growing right now. Just when there's demand, we look for more spaces.
And that's, well, let's do a little tasting of some cider here. And it's a great sound. Tell me what you're opening. And let's talk a little bit about cider itself, because you made an interesting distinction when we were talking earlier about, well, A, first of all, cider is wine. I think that's a great kind of place to start the definition. And tell me what you mean by that.
So wine is just alcohol fermented from fruit up to 15%. So if you make alcohol from peaches or apples or grapes, it's all technically wine, though obviously consumers think of wine as coming from grapes. Ancho was the first licensed winery in D.C. That's a technical definition set by the federal government. So all cider is technically wine. Most of the macro ciders that we see today are really heavily back-sweetened, carbonated drinks that, without casting any judgment on them, because there's a time and place for absolutely everything, they're essentially the hard sodas that are just as, you know, are in place with Twisted Tea or other things like that. On top of technically being wine, I look at our cider as wine because we make it like wine in every sense of the word. So we have two different processes, but they both start with us buying apples, whole fruit. We pay the orchards that we buy the apples from to press it when we arrive. We bring juice to our cidery on the day of pressing, and then we either put it in metal or wood tanks. And when we put it in metal tanks, we pitch wine yeast, frequently Sauv Blanc yeast. And when we put it in wood tanks, we don't pitch any yeast, so it's technically natural wine, completely wild fermented. But all of our equipment is winery-grade equipment. All of our processes are just winemaking.
And how much are you making at a time? What's a batch or a tank for you?
Our bigger fermenters are 1,000 gallons, which is in the grand scheme of things pretty small. But if you walk into our small 900-square-foot room, they're pretty impressive tanks. But we can only package 450 gallons at a time, which is a pretty big limiting factor for us.
Package as in?
So we package everything in cans or kegs. So kegs for draft accounts and cans for your home. But we're definitely limited by our small footprint and our small vessels. In the next 4 months or so, we'll be opening a facility that has 2,000-gallon fermenters instead of one, and that will really help us quite a bit.
So tell me what we have in the glass.
So this is our flagship product. This is called Cedar Blanc. Hold on, let me just make sure it's still good. Smells great. This is Cidre Blanc. It's 100% Gold Rush apples from the Mid-Atlantic. Gold Rush is our secret, or not our secret, it's basically the entire backbone of our company. So all of the other apples that we work with, traditional cider apples, the price points that they would lead to for consumers are just too high for it to be an everyday product. Gold Rush is the only culinary apple that we have access to that is just unbelievably characterful. I always say we're looking for apples of uncommon character. Despite being a pretty affordable and widely available apple, Gold Rush actually has tannin in it. So what you should be drinking right now, what you should be experiencing, is a really high acid cider that has a surprisingly large amount of tannin on the back end, so that it's just not a one note cider. But Cidre Blanc is our flagship. It's about 85% of what we make. And then truth be told, most of our other ciders are 40% Gold Rush as well. So our company is really in the business of procuring, processing, and fermenting Gold Rush apples. And then we blend it with everything that we find interesting.
Wow. It's delicious.
Thanks. I guess I should mention also that all of our ciders like this cider are 0 grams of sugar.
So added sugar.
I'm not just talking about added sugar. We don't add sugar, but we also ferment all the sugar out of it.
Gotcha.
So this actually has 0 grams of sugar in it.
Gotcha.
By using the apples that we do, they give a lot of perceived sweetness, which I love because I want you to experience the joy of sugar without actually ingesting in it. That's kind of the backbone to our company.
And if I'm drinking a more commercial brand of cider, how much sugar is how sweet are those?
So, and I'm not anti-sugar in ciders for my business. I really like the idea of being dry all the time. For me, 2 to 8 grams of sugar in a commercial cider is completely appropriate. I've had really beautiful Virginia-made ciders from Blueby or Albemarle or Castle Hill. They're usually in like the 2 to 5 grams. And that's really nothing. That's off dry and that's completely appropriate.
Grams per liter,
yeah. Uh-huh. So the macro stuff, I know, I guess I'll call out Smith & Forge. I think that they're 38 grams per serving, which is a 12-ounce can. So that's like 70 grams per liter or something like that. We're at zero, and I think a good range is 0 to 10.
Wow. That's getting into like soda sweetness.
Yeah. I mean, I think Coca-Cola is like the sweetest thing in the world, but those macro ciders are getting pretty close.
Huh. So you moved into production, and now you're... I'm interested to talk to you about the challenges of doing... So the restaurant business, the world is hard enough, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you've taken on this additional challenge, and especially trying to do this kind of work in a city like D.C., rents are sky high, spaces... It's hard to come by, and how's that been?
Yeah, it's been a challenge. I mean, it would certainly be a lot cheaper to just find some land out in Virginia or Maryland that's as cheap as we can find and make cider out there. But I think that cider has a hard enough time getting the reputation it deserves. And by being an urban producer in what I think is one of the best food and beverage cities in the world, I think it's really helped us get traction for a product that's otherwise really difficult to get attention with. So we are, you know, I'm not born in D.C., born in Baltimore, but my partners and I, all of our hearts are here. And despite the challenges of high rent and really high construction and labor and all that, being an urban producer is both a challenge and an advantage, I think. But a little bit more specifically, we've been manufacturing out of what is technically a restaurant. We're not really set up optimally for manufacturing. And we also haven't gone through a full business plan where we've taken a lease on a space that can be fully paid for by manufacturing as opposed to these hybrid models.
Right.
So we are looking now. We're taking about 3,000 square feet down the road to open what I loosely call a cannery, just so that we can put a permanent canning line in there. And I'd say I'm probably at the beginning of figuring out how to make those finances work.
It's it's never easy. I mean, the economics of production versus restaurant economics are just so wildly different.
Yeah, and being honest, I'm not really necessarily qualified for what we're doing. I'm just learning as I go. It's pretty typical small business stuff.
We all are.
Yeah.
But this is delicious. Can we try another one?
Yeah, absolutely. So this next cider is called Rosé. We are trying to make some money. So we figured Rosé is kind of a hot thing right now. However, you don't need to rinse because it actually has some of the same product in there.
Oh, wow.
So most rosé ciders are colored with adjuncts like hibiscus or beet juice or anything that will give like a really bright red color. That's for two reasons. One, getting red from apples is really difficult. And two, anthocyanin, which is the chemical compound that makes beverages red is really fickle and it can actually go clear. I remember I had a cherry cider from a producer that I had left on a shelf for 3 years, and I walked down one day and literally overnight it went completely clear. It was like bizarre. But this is a common thing that happens with red beverages. So I don't know of any other cider rosés in the market that are actually made completely from apples, but all of Ancho's ciders are apples only. We found these red fleshed apples in Washington State. They're literally red all the way through, like red skin, red flesh, all of it. And when you press them, it makes red juice. So we brought this juice over from Washington State and blended it 60-40 with Gold Rush, and we have Ancho Rosé.
Beautiful.
So I think this is probably our most popular cider right now. I love the flavor, but the color is really intense.
Like, almost like I don't know if it's the color that's like giving me this cranberry kind of impression.
It really is kind of comical because it has this like red fruit thing going on like crazy, and you would swear that there's something in there other than apples.
That's amazing.
When we got the red flesh juice in from Washington State, it we were joking. It tastes like organic high C. Like it tastes just like high C, but like really good high C, like from like an organic farmer or something like that.
Is high C even? Is it still made?
I don't know, but I remember what it tastes like.
I remember high C. I haven't thought about high C in years. Where is your cider? Where can people get your cider? At Ancho, obviously, but where else? You're getting these cans out into the world?
Yeah, we do sell cider to go at both of our locations, but really our future play is becoming a national brand, and we work with our accounts in D.C. through a distributor, just like any other alcohol producer. So I think I'll give a shout out to Glen's Garden Market, who's been an amazing partner to us. I think honestly they're selling about half of our cider right now. But Whole Foods, Odd Provisions, as you know, DC has mostly independent liquor stores, which is great. So I can't list off all 75 right now that are carrying us. But if your liquor store does not carry us, you should tell them we're sold by premium distributors and they should have Ancho cider on their shelves.
And in Baltimore, you are?
We're with Legends Distributors. Same deal. Any liquor, any account can buy our cider. They just need to call Legends.
I love it. Any thoughts about growing your own apples? I mean, it's something I get asked all the time, and my answer is a resounding no. I'm not going to be a farmer. I think farming is really, really hard. But a lot of cideries are attached to orchards, and I don't know if you've had thoughts about that or if the challenges of growing tree fruit in the Mid-Atlantic or something. I mean, you said you have them around the restaurant and at your house.
So we basically decided that we're already doing too many things that we don't know anything about. And so we decided a while ago that while love for apples is what is making this business really exciting for us, we're not naive enough to think that we can start growing trees well. And so after a lot of talking about it, we've decided that the best way for us to approach this is to be good partners to farmers. So all of our apples we buy from an actual farmer. We don't buy anything as commodities. We go out to these orchards. We talk to them about their challenges. And for the first time ever, we're really starting to work with farmers 3, 4, 5 years out. I just learned that the cicadas in 2021 are going to kill every tree planted in 2020 because we have a 17-year cicada year coming up, and cicadas kill 2-year-old trees. So I just learned from my farmers that any tree that I want for the next 5 years needs to be planted in 2019 because nobody's planting anything in 2020. So these are the type of things that like I find fascinating. I don't have an agricultural background. I want to know all about this stuff, but it just shows me that I have no business growing trees and risking my business on it. So all the trees that I grow are mainly for fun. I want apples, but really I want my neighbors to touch the apple tree and to be near it and to think about it. So we do have a couple hundred trees that we're growing in DC. We do make a cider called DCAF. I can't really say what that spells out, but you can probably guess.
You can actually. It's the internet, so you could say it.
So DC as fuck is 100% crab apples that I forage around the restaurant. I have 5 wild trees, crab apple trees that are in Trucks and Circle, and we made about 15 gallons of DCAF this year.
What kind of cider do you get from crab apples?
Well, crab apples can be really tannic, but this is actually kind of funny. There's a Home Depot on Rhode Island. I think it's the only Home Depot in DC. Every year their buyer brings in some group of ornamental trees. And 5 years ago, they brought in a quote unquote crab apple, but nobody knows what it was. But I know what these trees look like. And all the people that live near that Home Depot that were buying trees 5 years ago, they have these trees. And that's what we make DCAF out of. It's 100% Home Depot trees.
Wow.
No one knows what the apples are, but it is super high acid and really austere.
So dry and...
Everything we make is dry, but like it reminds me of like your old world white wine that's been put down for a decade, and you pull it out and you're like, is this spoiled or is this the best thing I've ever had?
Does cider oxidize, and is that something you're looking for?
It's not something that we're looking for, but cider does oxidize. We have 9 barrels from Jerez, from Sherry Country, that we brought over, and we do make a cider in a Solera style. It's the barrels were Fino, not Oloroso, so the previous contents weren't oxidized, but we're not getting the floor on it that Fino usually would get, so there is a little bit of oxidation in it. But by and large, we try to avoid it.
So you guys are looking to bring cider to the masses. Is it something that you think will help? I think you've talked about like apple culture in this part of the world, this part of the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we do pressing for kids in the season. You know, if you come to Ancho and on Sunday in the fall, we'll have people pressing apples. And really, we're doing that just so that people are reminded that it's a local natural resource. It's something that should be part of your life and ubiquitous. And so building apple culture is pretty imperative to getting people to drink cider.
Is there any chance of growing apples organically in this part of the world?
So actually, our largest grower in Winchester is doing 2 acres organic this year. It's the first time that she's done that. I'm not really well versed in the value of like organic certification, like from an economic point of view. But the problem with growing apples organically in this region is that most of the apples that are grown here are not from this region, and they're really dependent on sprays. And so part of organic apple farming is really paying attention to what does grow here. I'm trying to encourage our growers to grow Harrison because I love it, but because it is disease resistant. But I'd say it's something that's starting to take hold.
I mean, I've talked to a lot of orchardists over the years. And I mean, when you've talked to farmers, obviously you learn a lot, like you were saying. But I mean, what you're up against when you're growing tree fruit in the Mid-Atlantic is, you know, pests, obviously, but all this fungus. And
the humidity is killer this year.
And I'm always hopeful that, you know, we'll get closer, but you know, there's integrated pest management, which is kind of the default, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
I guess if you're thinking about it at all, you're thinking about IPM. But going much further seems to be a real challenge.
Yeah, before we really tackle organic, I'll give you an example of something that I face. We get Gold Rush from 3 orchards, and it's our primary apple. And one of these orchards it's just... not to put the other 2 down, but the Gold Rush we get from them is just the greatest thing that I've had to taste. And I talk to that farmer all the time, and he says, look, my secret is this easy. I don't overcrop the apples, and that means that they remove apples so that the trees aren't overburdened. And he said that he picks them the day before the first frost, and that's literally the entirety of his secret. But other orchardists are not, you know, I don't want to use the word greedy, but they're leaving too many apples on the tree. And so that has a major effect on our cider. So I need to tackle those questions before I go.
He's leaving the apples on as long as he can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like at risk of, you know, when the apples get really full, you know, you have a risk of tree limbs snapping or a rogue frost coming. So it can be risky, but that's how you get this really high quality juice. And that's what I want to encourage my growers to do.
But you must have then a fairly long season where you're making cider.
Yeah, I mean, so our philosophy is make wine, sell beer. And the reason for that is that when we started with 750s with cider, they just don't sell very well. And I think outside of the wine world, I don't think a 750 is a good vehicle for sales. If you look at beer, it's really just not working. And so we want to keep making the same quality product that we're making, but we put it in modern branded cans and kegs. I think I lost my way. What was your question?
The question was, we have spectators, or at least one. Is he a fan?
That's my very good friend who I have not seen in quite a while.
It's because he's been here. He's
jumping in here. He also built this.
Yeah, he built this. So, yeah, I'm sure he was. Hey, he's Seth. Been here most of the time.
That's Seth Dubner was the president of my fraternity the year before I was.
No way.
Yep.
In
Washington, in St. Louis at WashU. Yep. So I was hoping I would see Seth today.
That's amazing. Yeah, he's still trying to get this building done.
So make wine, sell beer. Trying to remember the exact question.
The season.
Oh, right. So I can't. My consumers will not tolerate us only having cider available for 6 months and then being sold out. And so we have to take a product that is really and truly seasonal in every way and convince or trick people into thinking that it's a year-round product. So the way that we do that is we get apples in September through January naturally. Around December, we put about 5 months worth of apples into cold storage. We do not use controlled atmosphere. It's just cold. But Gold Rush has been so good to us in so many ways, one of which is that it's one of the best keeping apples. So keeping is some apples rot right away. Some last for a long time. I just pulled the last Gold Rush from the season that ended in January out of cold storage yesterday. So we are still getting apples from last season. But I also have to overproduce right now. For the next 4 months, I'm not getting any apples. So Ancho currently is producing this month enough cider for the next 5 months and basically holding inventory so that when people order, it's there. But it's really just a product preserved from last season, really the same way that colonists were doing with cider in the first place.
But once it's in the can, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, since we've only been open for a year, I've never had one of our products that's more than a year old. But cider is really, as opposed to beer, which is pretty fragile when it's finished, cider is actually very stable when finished. And so our cans, we're finding, we have cans now that are a year old, and I haven't seen really any decline yet.
Well, there's one last cider here. Let's try this.
So this is a departure from our high-acid ciders. I mentioned before that high-acid is the best way to make quality cider in this region. This cider is different in two ways. One, half of it was fermented in Washington State. So this is our partner out there, Snowdrift, the guys with the Great Orchard. They're also a phenomenal cidery. So we have another program where we ferment half of our cider at a partner producer and half with us. They ship the finished cider over and we blend it. That's why this product is called Transcontinental. We also have an English partner named Tom Oliver, who we make Intercontinental with. That will be coming out in 3 months. We went to England, made cider with him, and shipped it over. So this cider is indicative of our collaboration series now. It's also the only cider I'm giving you that's really high in tannin. So Snowdrift has these old classic English varietals, Kingston Black, Yarlington Mill, Dobinette, and they're really high tannin apples, tannin like you would find in red wine. But these are the most fun ciders for me because it really challenges people's perception of what cider is. I get a lot of orange notes in the nose from the bittersweet apples. It also has a little bit of an almond thing going on.
Yeah. Almost like marzipan if it could be. Like a bitter almond.
Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, it's 100 degrees here in D.C. right now. The other two ciders I gave you are probably more appropriate for an outdoor patio event or something. But at night when my daughter goes to bed and I'm by myself at 11 p.m., this is the cider I want to sit down and drink.
This is a serious drink.
Yeah.
What do you think about cider and food?
I will tell you boldly that there is nothing that pairs better with food than cider. I love, you know, I'll go to any pairing event completely unprepared and just, you know, can pretty easily pair cider with food just because it's the best universal pair out there. It really is. Our ciders being bone dry kind of call for food. I'm not saying that you can't drink a 4-pack without eating, but with things that are really dry, food goes a long way. So cured meats, anchovies, olives, almonds, nuts, stuff like that. They're really great snacks to have with our ciders.
And the food at Ancho itself is?
It's all Basque inspired. Our chef is Catalan from Barcelona, but it's basically Catalan and Basque inspired. We have tons of cured meat. We have a huge ribeye on the menu. Steak is great with cider. Obviously, the high acid ciders go really well with it. We also cook a lot with cider too. I mean, you could, with our flagship Cidre Blanc, anything that calls for high acid white wine like Albarino or something, sub our cider and you'll be really, really happy.
That's delicious. This has been amazing. I think this is a good place to. I kind of want to stop talking and drink the rest of this cider.
I've got some extras for you if you want.
I really appreciate you coming by, and I'm really looking forward to getting back to Ancho. It's been too long. Thanks to everybody for listening to Origins, broadcasting here at the Line Hotel.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.